David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
I'm here to talk about Colin Quinn, one of my old good buddies, Dana Carvey. You might not know him. He's always in the shot with me. He's on the show with me. But he's not feeling well today. And I said, you know what? Just lay low. It's not his heart, because he did have heart things. He's not feeling great. And I said, you know what? I'll just handle this because I'm such a stage hog. It's embarrassing. It's just, so honestly, just stay home. But Colin, who I saw at the Brooklyn Diner last time I was in New York, you know, that's the famous Brooklyn Diner. He goes with Precious Seinfeld, but then I got to go with him. And he said it was underwhelming, whatever that means. By the way, I was watching the VMAs last weekend. The VMAs are on the MTV. It's a lot of code, Video Music Awards. MTV stands for used to be music television. You can use it. No, but there, the funny thing was, aside from me not knowing literally one person, I don't know, was J-Lo not there? Why was she not at something? We have a J-Lo not sighting. What a fucking burn. No, I like J-Lo. But the funny thing was on the carpet, Addison Rae's mom, Addison Rae, who I did when I hosted Jimmy Kimmel, she was on with me. And Addison Rae's mom is this really pretty nice woman. We sat next to her at the fights. Anyway, she's there with Young Gravy, who, again, I don't know. That's my fault because I have shit to do. But he's a singer, rapper, whatever. But he's a big, good-looking guy. But then we realized they called each other to go on a date because he likes cougars. And then I thought, this reminds me of, you know, Machine Gun Scarecrow, Machine Gun Kelly, and Megan Fox. Good-looking MILF, rapper with blonde hair. Likes to do press. They're doing press. Anyway, just a thought. Sorry, Colin. But back to Colin. Great friend of mine. Legit. Always see him when I'm in New York. And you'll hear from one little piece of tidbit trivia. Came up with the title Grown Ups. Wow. Boom. Take that, Meghan Markle, and your dumb podcast. Oh, there, I said it. Fighting words, online fight, jack up ratings. Okay, that's it. Dana's not here. He would say the same thing. We both love Colin. He was there when I was there. He did update for a while, I think right after Norm. He'll tell you about that. And then listen to mostly what I say when I try to talk over him. Here he is, Colin Quinn.
You will punch.
Colin, I like more of your tweets. It's so embarrassing. Compliment hits wall. disintegrates.
Yes.
Colin, I would like to goof around all day, but we have to get down to business.
We have a specific orders.
No. I just want to start by saying, even though we're not on camera, you think David was bothering Heather going, should I wear a collared shirt with a sweater? She goes, no, not with that V-neck. It's wrong. Okay.
She said, everything works on you. I go, good. She's reading a cue card I gave her.
If you took a bat to David's hair, it would be solid.
No, my hair's so wispy. It's still from the, I won't say when this aired, but I was at a certain worldwide award show recently.
Oh,
really? So you were
looking for trouble. Colin, one last question.
I'll start it off. So the first time I went to SNL, I wrote these sketches and I brought them in. Sandler got me in to meet with Jim Downey.
Thabadoo.
And I showed him I wrote these sketches, and one of them was the sketch. What it was basically, I'm still very proud of it, even though it got rejected by every host. And it was one of those sketches I kept showing up with, you know? And it was just like, people were like, stop. It was basically Roman Emperor. So it was like sanctimonious. It was like, well, I don't know. And then obsequious. Yo, you're right every time, my lord. And then Tim Meadows played Thesaurus, who goes, but that means this. So anyway, I brought that in, and Downey goes, yeah, this, you know, the people aren't going to, this is too, you know, and just handed it back to me. Like, here's the thing about Downey is, as intelligent, as brilliant as he was, if you showed up with something that he thought was smart and precious, a word in SNL back in the 90s.
Yeah, precious.
Was the worst thing he'd be called. He'd just throw it back at you. And then, and by the way, I also gave it to Chris Walken, who snapped at me. Wow. Chris Walken snapped. He goes, I go, hey, that sketch. He goes, I saw it. And I was like, wow.
Boy.
What accent is saw it? What is that? New York? What?
That's Chris Walken. He's from Queens.
Queens.
And the only reason I know that is the first time I met Chris Walken was at some hotel. And I go, hey, my family used to go to Walken's Bakery, which was his family bakery, a legendary bakery in Queens. My family traveled all the way from Brooklyn. That's how good the bakery was. German, you know, he's German. German bakery. And he goes, yeah, that was a long time ago, and just turns his head away from me.
God damn.
I've had it with him.
You've had it with him. Meanwhile, when I'm with him, I can't shut him up. David, this was great. That was great. Everything you do is great. I'm like, oh, come on, Christopher.
John Lovitz is the truth teller show business. He went up to him and goes, Chris, come on, be honest. Are you kind of making up your accent? Are you putting it on?
Oh, wow.
Low. Not low. He just starts laughing. Very
That's
John.
So funny.
I told you, Colin, he asked me once, he goes, you ever work with an actor dog? And I go, yeah. Mm. And he goes, you ever work with an actor cat? Did I tell you this story? And I've told it before. And I go, an actor cat. He goes, they don't do anything. They're like a regular cat. They don't move. And then if you like push them, they jump. But any cat will do that. And I go, yeah, I guess. And then he waits. Then he goes, you ever work with an actor mouse? And I go, no. And he goes, he did on Mousetrap, this movie. So it checks out. And he goes, they're good. You tell them to go up and take a beat and go to the left. And they do. They're smart.
They're smart.
That's when you really do agree with John Lovitz. Like, he must be acting a little bit.
Were you there when he said...
Why would you say that?
I know. Yeah. Why would you tell me that story?
And it's not just my bitterness about the bakery. It's a lot of it.
It's a little bit.
It seems like actors are pretty subtle in the 70s, and then later on, they sort of get bored, and then they just extenuate themselves, like Pacino. Wow. Yeah. No, you're screaming and just. Yeah.
Duvall managed to keep it.
Oh, keep it under, keep it real. You know, I have to give Colin a compliment. He's always highly respected. This is for the people that are listening. Highly respected comic,
very popular,
one of the smartest. Oh. Also, writes these one-hour shows that I wouldn't even understand just watching them, and then he also does all the research, makes jokes out of anything. I can't, if you gave me a subject, my act is about like 1,000 different things, but if you had said, oh, write an hour about one thing, I'd be like, give me 500 years. And he does it, and he does it again, and he takes something that probably doesn't sound funny on the surface, like the Constitution or something. Yeah, Constitution. And he goes, I think there's an hour there, and well, makes it really good.
Well, that's thank so, you. It's, Google does half of it, but thank you.
You've done 7 stage shows, but we're going to get to the part. We'll get to that now, but I like Tough Crowd. That was when was Tough Crowd, before or after?
It was before. It was in the early 80s.
Because a lot of shows get compared to Tough Crowd.
No, I'm lying. It was in the 2000s.
I thought you were 90s. So
I thought
like,
it was interesting. Is this true, Colin? You start stand-up, they said, in 84. You're on remote control remote 3 years control. Later. Yeah. Nobody gets a TV show in 3 years. How great did your stand-up get to get that? I mean, in 3 years?
Well, it's funny you say that because my stand-up was, not only was it behind, but I was always like a comedian's comedian, even in New York. So I would do these gigs. It was really the one time I had like that heat where you'd look, like I'd go to a college in the Midwest and there'd be 2,000 people. And the first time I did, I go, who are they here for? Is there a show here? They go, you. And I go, oh no.
Oh wow.
And like half my act was about like specific streets in Brooklyn. And you know, it was kind of a rough go. But they didn't care. As long as I stayed and signed autographs and did pictures afterwards, nobody cared.
Yeah.
So I'd hang out like 2 hours after the I'd do like 45 minutes to my laughter. Yeah.
He does. After halfway through his act, I saw him and these 17-year-old kids are cheering. And then he goes, and now I'm going to read from my Roman Empire sketch.
Yes. And now I'd like to read the works of James Joyce. Please listen.
But they were just excited. So you're saying they see you on that show. Everyone's freaking out. I'm in Arizona watching it going, right. This guy's super cool. He's funny. To get a show that's cool like that on MTV, they weren't always hits or would always work. And it's a music show. I mean, it's a music station, but you've got Kari, the beautiful girl.
Kari, gorgeous, Kenny. And by the way, before I did any of that, my biggest celebrity gig, and I was paid very well and was treated very nicely, was opening for Dana in Wilmington, Delaware.
Well, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You were a great guy.
I suppose so. I wasn't
mean. Yes, he was totally nice, paid better than anybody had ever paid, and was just a cool guy, nice guy, before and after.
Jeez, that's nice. David was one of my dandy openers.
He was?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Arizona?
New England. Oh. New England tour, the summer sheds, where it was like 100 degrees and humidity. It was. Those are tough. You ever play those outdoor sheds in August? Brutal.
Dana, did we share a car?
I think I drove us around.
I think you had a rental car, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was fun. That was fun for me because Colin, it makes fun of me, but it was true. He goes, do 20 minutes. So I'd walk up there with shorts and flip-flops and drink a Heineken and go, what else is going on?
Then and he drape over the stool and he's kind of whispering, what's up? I go out and I'm dancing. Hey, isn't that special? Gotta do it. Gotta pew.
David goes, this is going worse than the Challenger.
Oh, yeah. I go, Dana, my closer is about the Challenger exploding last week, so just you're going to go up right after that. And he's like, oh, I don't know, maybe. And I go, NASA need another 7 astronauts. And he goes, you know what? I wouldn't even put that in there. I would probably.
Some girl screams, David goes, who's that baby Jessica?
I remember Wellington, though, with you, because you were a great comic. I remember about 15 minutes
back
in, I just said to the sound guy, is there any way we can kind of, have you given him the light? That was my first move.
Like, well, he hasn't gone on yet.
Could we get him off? I mean, light. I was just like, because the waves of laughter were vibrating. I was like, is there any way we can get him off politely?
Oh,
how long did you do?
I really love that. Yeah, like 20.
20.
Shit.
It's fun.
I love it.
When the audience knows you.
So after Remote Control, is it 3 years between that and SNL? And what do you do during those 3 years?
It was more like 5 years, and I'm just doing stand up, and really, I mean, it was going pretty badly. You know, there's something about being back in coach after you were in first class. It's very humbling and very good. It's very good for you. But then what happened was I was drifting around doing stand up and had a couple of things going on, but nothing really. And then Fred Wolf goes, hey, Lauren's coming out to see people. I wanted to see you. I really think you should be on the show. It's ridiculous. And you know, when Fred puts his mind to something, it's happening.
Yeah.
And so we had this big audition in LA, and I'll never forget. It was during the long desert nights when stand up was finished. So they had to bring in audiences for free. So this is a improv.
Oh boy.
They had to bring in all these kids from like from a summer camp, 15-year-old kids. So it's like 200 kids from a summer camp in the middle of their camp.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a summer. It's
I think I remember these crowds.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I bombed so badly, so badly, and I was so fat that Aaron told me afterwards, she goes, I told Lauren, he goes, I thought this guy was didn't look like this. She goes, I think his face is in there somewhere.
I don't remember you ever being that
That's
heavy.
So funny.
Aaron Maroney said that. She was, I think his face is in there somewhere.
That's such a great thing to say. David, Lauren really likes you. She used to go, David, Lauren really likes you. I'm like, why am I not in the show? I don't know, but I think he really likes you. And Aaron was very like a positive, fun force running around that place.
And then she was great. And then Lauren hired me as a writer because Fritz goes, no, you hear the writing? Do you hear the jokes though, Lauren? And then when I got there, Lauren's go, yes, you kept a couple of people's careers alive for a few more weeks with that performance, basically saying how badly I bombed. And then hired me as a writer. And the only one I knew there really was David and Norm, you know?
Did you, was Marcy there or Shoemaker or any writers there?
Marcy and Shoemaker, we were all there, but I didn't know them.
Yeah,
before.
Yeah. So you come on as a writer, and I was probably, is that 95 maybe?
Yeah, 95 was you and Huge Fink. It was your last year there.
Oh, right, my last
Hugh
thing.
Huge Fink, yeah.
And that's when you started Hollywood Minute.
Yeah, I think I'd done Hollywood Minute a few times, and then I had my own 5 minutes.
Right, that's what I mean.
Lauren
right.
said, if you stay a year, I think Farley and Sandler left.
That's
so
right.
It was too much of a shakeup to have everybody go at once.
Yeah, so you and Norm stayed.
Yeah, huh? David.
Hey!
Colin.
Hey.
Huh?
And old Norm. All Norm wanted to do was play football in the hall. So
oh, yeah. We also had that Magic Johnson basketball hoop.
We had fake sports in the hall. That was the only thing we did all day. And Norm would storm down the hall in those, he dressed like Crisscross, like these young rapper kids. He had like these giant, he was dressed like in Carl Kani jeans and just be like, ah, like storming down the hall, just starting trouble.
I know where he wasn't going, the bathroom. Because he had that in their office. All right, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
That's right.
How is your social battery right now, Dana?
Social battery is it's a little slow. I probably could kick it up a little bit, kick it up a notch.
Mm-hmm. You're running at about 38% on your social battery.
I'm not going to say 38, but I'm going to say it's over 30, less than 50. You do the math.
When my social battery gets under like 70, I get nervous and have to plug it in.
Right.
You know, this summer you got to bring it because everyone's going to be out and about. You can kind of hide in winter, but listen, you got to, sometimes therapy is a way to get your thoughts together, juice up your battery and get back out there because a lot of that is social anxiety.
Yeah. And it's all in your head. Like everything starts there. And so with BetterHelp, you're going to get advice and get unstuck and start get out in the world. And that's just good for your brain.
Yeah, listen, whether you've been to therapy personally before, I think online is probably so much easier. Like I've been to therapy and just the fact that my biggest fear is like I couldn't change. Like what if you get someone you don't like or what that's going to steer your life kind of. So with BetterHelp, if you don't like your therapist, you can switch. There's no additional cost.
And if you're out on the off the reservation, seeing a regular therapist, then you have to get a secondary therapist to coach you how to get rid of the first therapist. With BetterHelp, super, super easy.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You don't want
that. It's convenient. It's flexible. Suits your schedule. Give it a try. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/FOTW today. That gets you 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/FOTW.
We found so many ways to not write, Colin, because we would shoot hoops in that little tiny Nerf hoop, and then we'd throw the football. And it was anything to go, we got to start writing. And I would always want to write while I was fresh in the middle of the day, but it was so frowned upon. Like, what a loser.
I always hated, I was the same way. I would write on Sunday and Monday. I always thought that was so fake that everybody's like, we have to stay up all night Tuesday. It's like, no, we don't. You could write on Monday and Sunday and you can come in at 12 in the afternoon on Tuesday.
I know, you really look down on like reason, a nerd if you're writing. They're like, yeah, what are you doing, Spade? I go,
it was this thing from the old days when people did coke, which I understand that was organic. But by the time we were there, it's like, why are we staying up all night?
Yeah.
It's fake.
The all-nighters with no coke was just a bad idea because I get why they used to do it. But now I'm like, we don't have coke and we do have the day off. So we could fix this.
Well, I feel like you just reiterated what I said. Yeah. Literally, exactly.
Right.
And, you know.
While I was waiting for Dana. I just was trying to. By the way, Colin has another real big credit.
I had a Wi-Fi issue.
Colin, you know what his big credit is? What movie did Colin think of the name of? Do you know this answer, Colin?
I know it. Of course I know it.
I don't know it.
I'll give you a hint. It was called Lake House for a long time.
Oh, it would be Black Sheep or Tommy Boy.
No.
No. Okay.
It was Grown Ups.
The Godfather.
Grown Ups.
Godfather. You thought it was Grown Ups. We couldn't think of a name.
Why would you change the subject in the middle of SNL?
I know, we're going back to it. I just had to make sure I said that because you told me that I have to say that at some point. Okay.
I did?
So you're on SNL and you're a writer, and you're a really good writer, so it's different. I think you were very comfortable in that position, right?
Oh, I was too comfortable.
Yeah.
I was, I remember the first time, my first sketch was that Chevy Chase was the first host. And my first sketch was up first. And it was called The Blame Game. And it was a racial game show with a white guy and a black guy, Tim and Chevy. And it was called The Blame Game, where everybody just blames each other for what's going on.
Right.
You know? And then we get to rehearsal, and Lorne goes, where's the buzzing sounds for the, because there's no buzzing sounds for the
buzzers.
So I go, I didn't think like that was the important part of the sketch. He looked at me. Like,
oh boy.
Oh, this guy's an idiot. So they got buzzers, but then the buzzer during the game, Chevy just starts pressing the buzzer.
Oh, to fuck it up?
Well, I don't know if he meant it to. It's hard to tell. Yeah. It's almost like a kid with a butt.
Yeah. Oh, and it kept screwing up and it turned into that.
I don't think he was trying to sabotage it. Right. Like
it turned into the buzzer sketch and it lost all its smartness.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Who knows? I know. God.
Who knows? But it was good to get it, you know, like early on. I didn't realize how important it is to get sketches on, you know what I mean? I was so cocky, like my sketches wouldn't get on. I was like, what's that problem? You know, like everybody at SNL, you go in there, everybody's like, my stuff should be, you know, everybody's got a little bit of an attitude. I feel that everybody who makes it out of there alive has a little bit of an attitude.
Sure. I'm so damaged. It's a combo of things. I blame my dad leaving me second, and then I put SNL.
SNL first. Yeah. I think a lot of people would agree with that. Yeah.
But I did get a lot of fun off it. I'm not saying negative, but I actually wasn't prepared to write like you had to write there. I was a rookie, and it takes so long. You were ahead of me in that department, but it was fun. You were always pretty cool to me about sketches. Yeah, I don't know if you remember this. You would, after read through, come up and give me a compliment if you liked it. And those are not always easy to come by in a semi-competitive situation. And so I always appreciate it because you're such a smart writer. And then I thought maybe you were just doing that to do it, to make me feel better, you know, to make me feel like, yeah, it was good. You were just saying it. And then one time you came up to me after read through and you go, hey, that thing, and I'm ready for my compliment. And you go, yeah, you can't do that. And I go, oh, I think he said we're going to do it. And you go, yeah, but you can't. You can't.
Why, it was hacky?
Yeah, it was hacky. You go, it's comedically, you just can't. You can't do it. And I go, oh. And then I was like, oh, you are thinking it through every week. And you are giving me actual compliments. And now is a time where your honesty is appreciated.
Unwanted.
Yeah, unwanted, appreciated. And but I got scared because I go, oh no. By the way, disappointing you is horrible. You were just telling me, oh yeah, because all of us kind of look up to Colin and go, oh, I hope Colin thinks it's funny. And then when you didn't, you weren't mean about it. You were just like, basically save yourself and save your reputation and you don't need this. And I'm like, I didn't understand. I go, but it'll get on. You're like, yeah, I'm not getting to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing about my arrogance. When people ignore my advice, I go, what?
My arrogance.
Like, I never think to myself, like, hey, you know what? They have to do what they have to do. I'm always like, I just told you what to do. All right.
It's awesome.
That's the kind of delusional grandiosity that I'm capable of.
Where do you fall in, like, because I'd heard this from other people about you being especially generous in a sincere way. If someone's, but you know, Smigel told me about his cartoon, and you would come up to him and really critique it and tell him how much you loved it. And if, you know, so where do you put yourself on the competitive spectrum of comedians, like sharp elbows and that kind of thing? Or do you feel like you have a different Irish attitude or something? Because you seem so centered in a way to me,
yeah,
as a person.
Well, I mean, I want to do well. I mean, I want to be successful. But I mean, I feel like comedians are really the only ones that really understand each other. So it's like, I always love comedians because I feel like somehow there's something in a comedian's frequency that we, like, even when they're not, even if you take the hackiest comedian in the world, if you're sitting somewhere with them, it's like a different conversation than with anybody else. Not that we're better or worse. It's just they're on my wavelength. And I just feel like they're all we have, you know?
I couldn't agree more. If you're in New York at a party or something and there's no comedian there, and you're talking to businessmen and CEOs, and then a comedian comes in, instantly both kind of...
Even actors or anybody, there's something in them that's different than comedians. Comedians have this like dead part of us that is really funny and makes us who we are, where we're just like, oh, like you don't have to have that enthusiastic or, you know, that earnest thing that a lot of people, even actors, have, where they're like, it's just another layer. We're like, oh God, that's brutal. But it's like how we feel. I can't even articulate it, but it's like you know it when you see it, you know?
It's the elephant in the room. They usually identify it. And then you have a co-conspirator, whether it's about someone's dress or the guy who's soiled his tuxedo, whatever it is. Yeah. And they just go right at it. Yeah.
Interesting. I went to when you go to any party in Los Angeles where there's celebrity types, you always sort of find a comedian and then another one finds you and then you're all in a corner. And then sometimes other people like to come over thinking that'll be the fun group.
Yeah.
And then they also like, what do you guys think about blank? You know, what's going on right now? And then you get to blab around. But it is always fun because you feel some sort of comfort.
Or other people. The classic somebody who comes up to you and goes, I don't know if you know, a civilian, quote unquote, I don't know if you could use this, but I always thought this was funny. You know, one of those guys. And you're like, oh, no.
I don't know if you could use this. It's like, I know we can't.
We know we can't.
You don't have to tell us. We'll tell you right now.
But there you go. They should do a show about my job. You should hear about my job because there might be something there.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah, so you did Joe Blow. Remember Joe Blow on Update?
Yeah.
So Joe, you were a construction worker.
I love the name.
That was my happiest things was that Joe Blow and then and the lion. Those are my favorite
Lenny
things.
Lenny the Lion. Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
When I did those two things, at that moment, I think it was the first Lenny or Joe Blow where I was like, I just lived my dream. Now I can die because being on SNL live. So it could never be taken at that time, especially, but still to this day, live, that still means so much. And then to do those things that were really important to me, I was like, that was it. I could have died right then.
You got to write it. And there's something about writing it. And you go, you do a TV show, you do a movie, and a year later it comes out and you go, oh, they cut out that part.
Yeah.
Oh, it didn't get picked up. It never got aired.
Well, the news changed. Yeah. That doesn't mean anything anymore.
It's right there. It's how you wrote it, how you want it out there. You actually present it, and then you walk off, and your phone can ring and go, I just saw it, and I'm in Milwaukee. And you go, oh, it's out. Okay, so what I thought of is out.
And stupid Norm, right before I go on the air, Norm to the core, I'm in a lion costume, the first time ever. You know, I'm nervous, because it's SNL, and just, you know, I wrote this thing, and I'm getting it on.
You look dumb.
And then, you know, nobody really remember, you know, some people maybe remember me from MTV, but it's been a few years, you know. And then I'm sitting there in a lion costume, and then Noah goes to the crowd, is that Colin Quinn? He's dressed in a lion suit.
Yeah, I see that. But he's, you know, he's not a lion, right? He's not a lion. Yeah. He's just sort of in a lion suit. Yes. You know what I mean? Don't be frightened. He's not actually a lion. No one like Norm.
No.
I mean, how do you, you followed Norm, and Norm was one of your favorite comedians. And
yeah.
How was that for you?
It was very ugly. And when I look back now, I feel like I sabotaged what I was doing too, because I was so afraid of being like, you know, hey, like, no, I'm screwed up. I'm going to be the good guy. And so I kind of went out of my way to be villainous. I feel like I just sabotaged my time at that spot, because SNL for me is such a demarcation between the great times I had there, which was before that, and then the dream gig, which is to Weekend Update, where I was miserable, Lorne was miserable. It was just not, it was a bad thing. It was a bad time.
What, to speak to that, was it because the hangover of Norm being fired? Is that what gave
it's because
its
Norm getting fired, and then suddenly I found myself in a position where, oh, so I'm going to be like the goody two shoes. I had never done that in my life.
Oh,
so
I just, right.
I felt like I went out of my way to sabotage every episode that I could until that became my thing. And it was not a good thing, but it was how it went. So I feel like I destructed I got off on that foot, you know, with the Norm thing. And then I would never try to be like, engaging. I would barely smile. And I mean, I was kind of like that in stand-up to begin with, I guess, but I took it to another level. And I really feel like that's what I did. But I didn't realize that till like 7 years ago, you know?
And how
had you grown into your face by then?
Yes. Sometimes I hadn't. My weight's been up and down a lot.
Your face was there.
I thought that during that update time, Aaron was always over in 8H right near you, just with her arms crossed, kind of staring and pointing to your face. But I heard that was a rumor. Sorry.
But
if you heard the first part of the podcast, that made sense. But
it has to be a bit of an uphill battle, no matter who you're following. You know, it was like Dennis, there's Neilan, there's you.
Sure.
And so you got to go, okay, I'm the new guy. There might be mad because Norm gets a little more legendary status because he got fired or whatever. So they're like, he's like
a
hero.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, what do you got? And you weren't like super sketch guy at that point. So it wasn't like bringing Fallon up or something.
No, but it was more than, like I said, it was also me just sabotaging it, because I was like, I'll show you. I'm not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was not, and it was just it was a weird vibe. It was a weird fit. And when I look back, I know why now, but at the time I didn't. I was just like, I don't know what's going on.
What specifically would you say to your younger self then about that moment? You know, just have
I would
more
say
fun
if
or
you're
going to
do it.
Or, yeah.
Yes. Be, try to charm them a little bit. Don't just be like going on. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, I would say that to myself in comedy in general. I feel like, you know, I always had this weird thing about comedy. It was like, you shouldn't be trying to cheat and, you know, smile and win them over. And you know what I mean? Like, do your material. So I always had like an attitude that didn't incorporate that, which was then I wasn't even enjoying it. So it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
If you're not going to bring your personality to, you might as well just hand out books. Here are my jokes. Everybody read them and I'll sit on stage. And after an hour, time is up and we'll just leave.
But it is true. It's like, it is show business, and you have to, they go, like Sandler came, he knew what he was doing right away.
Yes. Well, no, not right away. I knew Sandler the first time he started.
Yeah.
It took him about a year and a half. And the first year and a half, he was up there like a young Roy, you know, and then he came back. He went on the road for a year and a half and he came back and you're like, oh, he had all his charisma was there suddenly. But
confidence and charisma. Yeah. Same thing.
But also because, I mean, you don't want to overdo it, because how many people do you know that were just, I worked with a lot of 80s really hacky people that were just all fake, and we all resented it when they'd go up there and they'd start laughing and the crowd would start laughing and they'd be just, it was all this sound and fury signifying nothing. So it was like, you're like, wait a minute, that's not stand up. This is, and so then you overcorrect the other way. And just go, I'm not going to move. I'll just, and so there's, you know what I mean?
Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series High Hopes is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just co-workers, the owners and bud tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu.
Hmm.
I had
to
learn...
Hey, ¿qué pasa?
Oh, hey.
¿Qué pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language. I did it through textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid.
But stupid.
Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was.
They
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent, or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
French. Oh, Spanish, French, Italiano, Sturman, Korean, Chinese, Javanese,
careful,
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions. Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's
yes.
The hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio companion. You can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages. For any and all trips and language needs in life, that's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today.
Can I just interject for a second that I think you found the title of maybe your next book?
What? Sound and Fury.
Sound and Fury signifying nothing. That is an incredible phrase. If you just think of that.
Well, it's Shakespeare. It's Shakespeare.
Oh, it's Shakespeare. Oh, Bill Shakespeare. Okay. I love it. Oh, I'm not really well-read, so.
What was funnier than Phil Hartman going, than Chris Farley going, looks like we got ourselves a Bill Shakespeare over here. David. When David goes, I really was thinking of becoming a writer.
And he goes, hey, look at this guy.
And he goes, well, actually, we try to encourage his writing.
Phil goes, actually,
Chris
Matt.
Chris Farley's face. Chris Farley's face was so depressed over that.
And then he flicks his glasses up and down. Hey, I can't see too good.
Yeah, he was always like
that. Is
that
Bill
that.
Shakespeare over
I
there?
Don't know how to write anything every night.
And
that.
Phil Hartman totally denies him. He goes, actually, we try to encourage you. And his face was so depressed and mad.
I like when he turns on, he goes, you know, Dad, I wish you'd shut your big yap. I like at the beginning of that sketch, they think of different reasons to make him gacked out. So they go, we hired a motivational speaker. He's been down in the basement eating coffee beans for 3 hours. We're like, why? to explain why he's going to bust out of the door and fall through the wall.
I know. But that was the problem, speaking of the show. Here's what the problem, in my opinion, there's two big problems with SNL. One is structural things, which obviously it's the most genius structure of all time, right? It's still the most genius structure. A live show where every, Sarah Silverman once described that. I go, what do you think of the show last night? She goes, it's like it always is. It's a casino. Even if the first, that sketch you watched didn't work, you're like, you know what? The next one's coming up. And I was like, yeah. And, but the two things that I thought were big mistakes was one, when they would have the rewrite session where suddenly everyone's throwing in these funny lines that ruin the magic that sketch had that writer wrote. So you'd have all these lines, blah, 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 and then it just killed the sketch. Because
it's getting gangbanged by too many people that are a different styles.
All have good jokes. Those jokes are better than what was originally in the sketch, but they ruined the alchemy or whatever. And,
And
then the other thing was, which I'm sure you guys much more than me must have dealt with the frustration, especially Dana, which is dress rehearsal, some of the best things. Who cares? The dress crowd's not laughing. That doesn't mean it's not the greatest sketch. And it's a different animal. So cutting things based on an audience response between dress and air, I felt like that was crazy. Because how many great sketches you see, you go, no, you can't cut that. It's going to work. But just because that dress audience didn't work. That Dana, you must have like five characters that you had that you were like, no, just let it go to air, you know?
And then eventually, you know, I had so much status there and had a lot of great collaborators that I would try to not peak at dress. I wanted the air show, my brain, and we all had that, and at update two.
To beat the system.
You want your live show to be the voice in your head going, this is the best I've done it this week. And that took me a while to learn. I peaked at read through a few times, just trying to get it on the show. God, crazy. Yes. And never got back there.
I get that. Yeah. I can see that. You know, when De Niro, one of the big things was on was Joe Pesci was on with and Brewer used to do Pesci. So they asked me to fill in who I was going to do De Niro.
Yeah.
As De Niro. So De Niro shows up and at dress rehearsal, it was the most magic thing because hadn't seen them yet. We heard they were coming and it was this, and air was good. But dress rehearsal was just
terrible. Yeah.
De Niro had a different energy to him, you know?
Well, then you're discovering it still a little bit because you're so beaten down after the read-through with Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday walkthroughs. By the time you get to an audience, you really think the thing sucks. So that's the first time you're getting laughs since read-through, since Wednesday. And so it's hard to get back to that on the air show, that discovery of like, wow, I'm killing. This is great, you know?
Well, Shoemaker used to always talk about you, and he said, Dana, even if he didn't have the guy's voice down completely, he always had something about him that he discovered that was so funny that made it, that took it to another level. You know what I mean? He said, you will always do that. Now, did you do that, like, I don't know how impressionist really, did you do that consciously, or did you watch tapes? How long do you have to watch somebody? How many times do you have to watch Ross Perot before you go, that?
He was pretty immediate, but if anyone cared to look at the first one, I wasn't as committed. I wasn't extending the rhythms. And then as you watch someone, these sub rhythms keep coming out. You know, can I finish one time? Can I finish one time? I don't know if that was in the first one, like a press conference.
Right.
You're
right.
Not listening. That frustrated kind of thing. I just yesterday, and I'm not like James Austin Johnson, but I thought I heard a new Trump rhythm that I hadn't heard before, which is like, it's not a great Trump, but the rhythm you'll hear at the end where he fades away. He's like, and gas is going up, $5 a gallon, $7, $10 a gallon. How high can you count? How high can you count? That's the one. I hadn't heard it.
Yes.
10, 12, 15 dollars a gallon. How high can you count? It just killed me.
And he looks away sometimes. Yeah. He sort of turns aside.
Yes.
I like when Dana, I like when Dana says, excuse me, and but no one's interrupting him.
My angle was that he would just take a word and repeat it for 3 minutes and make it work. We're going to win like everybody. We're going to be winning. We're going to win, excuse me. We're going to win so much, you're going to be tired of winning. You're going to win. We're going to win. We're winning. Too much winning. People are saying, please, enough with the winning. So that Trump was an amazing...
people are saying.
Such a great guy.
He always has people saying things to him.
Yeah.
People are saying
many
this guy's a crook.
Many people are saying.
Many people are saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Many people don't like... I like when he says, many people don't like this person. A lot of people have come to me.
And then there's... You know,
right,
nothing. Just to make someone look like an asshole.
But yeah, that's...
He's a loser. A lot of people are whispering to me he's a loser.
Many people are saying. Many people... Excuse me. Many people are saying... Like, he's not very well liked. You know, you were nice. Now you're not so nice. Okay? So he's, you know, a one-off. Someone asked Rudy Giuliani before he went a little kooky, how do you define Donald Trump? And he said he's unclassifiable. like a rare insect. Yeah. And you can't. Insect. There's never been another one like him. So what do you, I don't know where to go. There's so many things I want to ask.
I have a question. No, I have a lot.
Colin, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you do update, were you working with, was it a Downey or was it Herb Sargent or who was kind of running it with you?
No. It was, we had different people, but it was Carlock, Robert Carlock.
Oh, Robert Carlock. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And was Tina on yet? No.
Tina was on. No, she wasn't on the show, but she was the head writer.
Oh shit! When we had Myers on, and I mean, I think he did. Did he say he offered you what was it? What part? Scott.
He not only offered me, but that's a rumor. No, wow. He literally Sarah Silverman again called me. She goes, Mike Myers is looking for you. I go, oh, all right, yeah. He calls me up and he goes, hey, I'm doing this movie. This whatever it was. It's about he describes Austin Powers. He's this guy from the '60s. And I go, that's great, man. I had nothing. I literally, he goes, so I'll fly out and you do this part. You know, I saw you on Gary Shandling playing Rip Torn's son. So just do whatever you did then is great. Just do that in the movie.
Wow, nice.
And I go, yeah, I'm working on my own movie though. And he goes, oh, you shooting something? I go, no, I'm just rewriting it. And he goes, all right, well, this will take a few days. It's not a big deal. I go, nah, I'm busy. And he literally goes, what? Like, he goes, what's going on? Like, he didn't understand what was happening. He goes, I go, you know, plus the show's happening. He goes, yeah, but it's a week off. I'll talk to Lauren. Don't worry about that. I go, nah, I'm just, thank you.
And he goes, fucking funny.
So stupid. And then he goes, look, I go, it sounds great. Well, good luck with your movie. I go, it sounds like the kind of movie. I said, you can even get like Burt Bacharach type music. He goes, no, we have Burt Bacharach doing the actual Burt Bacharach music. Like, this is a big production. And for whatever combination of stupidity on my part, I still, you know, I just kept turning it down. I mean, I was, all he did was say, look, I love you on Gary Shandling. This is the part. Do your thing. And that's it. And I turned it down. And he goes, well, he goes, I can't beg you to do it. He goes, you know, I'm offering it. And whatever idiotic thing, and I've turned down a lot of things in the business, but I never regretted them, you know. Mm-hmm. But that one I regret because it was great.
I have heard you've turned down stuff, and I go, it's great. But you know, in your own mind, if it's not for you, whatever reason, you move on.
But what is your reason? So in most cases, I was right. Most I defend it all. That one case, I was wrong. I was stupid. Because he made it for me. He said, just do what you did.
Yeah, it's just walk in the park.
It's easy. Yeah.
Sometimes
you already did it.
I think for all of us, you know, if you're lucky enough to get on TV or be in show business and you have things coming at you, and later on, I would always say to myself, I did not know what time it was. I was in something that I had no context for. So, you know, how could you know that Austin Powers would be a trilogy and a global smash when you turn it down.
Oh, I couldn't know that, but it sounded fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's funny. And he's great.
Yeah, and he's funny. I always liked him.
Yeah.
He's great. I don't know what my problem was. Yeah.
But Dana, I agree, and I'm chiming in, even though people say I talk too much. But
my wife is all over that. She says you're great.
You're saying about that, Dana, I like to use words like frequency and alchemy when I talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just stole them from Colin. And I'm going to use them all the time.
Oh.
But
full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
And I can't. I wouldn't be able to get away with that one. But they would buy alchemy from me, maybe. But when I, Dana, you're saying you get in sort of a vortex, and I wasn't in like a super fame vortex like when you were on SNL. But when I did SNL, and in the summer we did Tommy Boy, and then we come back to SNL, and they go, "What do you guys want to do this summer? What movie?" There's this one Black Sheep that Fred, you know, has, and we're like, "Oh yeah, okay." Hi. And then we do that.
Hey,
and then
you're good. Hey, you're not so David, good. Okay, all right. No, you're really good. You're not so good. Okay,
Dana, I'm going to talk about you in a second. I just want to tell something to David, but I have a big compliment for you at the end.
That was really good. No, I swear to God, that was really good. But you're not so good. Okay,
we're doing Fred Wolf. So then, and then the next summer, I think there was. Do you want to do a Gap Girls movie or something? But the point was, I didn't realize how hard it is to get a movie, and how it just that's a thing you're caught up in where things are getting kind of thrown at you. And then I was like, nah, maybe. And then like a summer later, I'm like, I think I wanted this movie. And they're like, oh, that ship kind of sailed. And I'm like, well, what about this? And they're like, nah. And then I thought, holy fuck, is it hard to get a movie? And they're like, yeah, dumb fuck.
If it makes you then feel better, I turned down Wayne's World 1. I thought right before we did it, a couple weeks before, I go, I don't know. I don't think so. That'll be all right.
Psycho.
I love it.
Yeah. Just like, you know, maybe I, you know. Maybe. Yep.
Yeah, of course.
And
well, it's also everything you do is a gamble that could hurt you. You almost rarely think about the upside. You go, if this fucks up, I'm in a bigger hole.
Yeah, but that's what you think. But meanwhile, it doesn't mean any. The more you do, the people that do everything is Teflon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rarely, the last time anybody got screwed was Billy Squire doing his video for, you know. And Sandler told me that one. He goes, you know, I remember him telling me, this Billy Squire video from 19. I was like, what? He goes, oh, it destroyed him. Because he did the whole thing. He was laying on these silk sheets. It messed up his credibility.
Yeah.
Billy Squire was amazing.
Yeah, he's fucking unreal.
He did some video that was like on some silk seats doing like a pretty boy video. And
he didn't lose me for good. I took a little
pass
for a
little bit. I'm sorry, but you guys familiarize myself? I'm representing this other part of the audience. Billy Squire. What was his song?
Lonely is the Night.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And he had Stroke It.
Stroke Me.
Stroke Me.
Yeah.
I was trying to clean it up. I was trying to PG it for the audience.
Oh, okay. And that was, I think Sandler used that in Billy Madison.
I think he did.
I have a thing that every time Adam's name is mentioned, I just do it to myself. Every time Sandler's mentioned on the podcast, I just do that. I've already done it twice. Yeah. Show business. The only guy who seemed to have show business wired first, the people who are like, I always see Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno happened to be the most successful metrically in many ways. They both were so pragmatic about it. And Leno was always, you never stop. His whole thing was, don't stop.
Right.
Guys, stop. Right. Don't ever stop. And it was very, very logical advice.
You know, Colin, go ahead. What you were saying about people that do a lot of stuff, I sometimes do a lot of stuff, but also it's because out of some of its fear and some of its, if I'm getting a script for a movie, we did this one, Father of the Year. I don't even have to say individual movies, but they're never handing me the number one movie out there that's the funniest one written because there's a hierarchy of who's getting that. So if I get a script and they're willing to do it, I'm either co-writing it or I'm trying to help punch it up, or they're saying this one's a little bit of a mess. There's a reason it's not made right now, but there's something there.
Right.
And if you want to put the work in and try to help it or do whatever, or you think you can bring something to it. And those are more opportunities where you go, I can't sit back and say I'm going to get the best of everything, or you won't do anything. So I think what you're saying has made me think, you try stuff to go, to take a swing, that might help me because I can get in there and do my best. So a talk show, anything, just get in front of people where someone goes, oh, because it's constantly an audition. So if you hit one that wasn't supposed to be a hit, people go, oh, okay, maybe we'll give them another one. You know, that kind of thing. You just got to stay out there.
But what you also said, even talk show, movie, whatever, when they let you write on it, I feel like all of us comedians are like, oh, let me get a swing at this script too.
Yeah.
Like that's how I feel everything I've ever read. I'm always like, that's good. I could have made it better.
I remember reading Colin had a few scripts and I'd say, oh, can I read that one? And the compliment is really, I don't know why they're not making them other than it was almost too smart. It was very funny and very smart. And I think in our world, you know, sometimes you don't want to be the smartest one in the room. What room are you in?
It's that thing of like, you know, it's going over people's heads and it's like a really big audience out there. Just do what you want.
You mean the Beatles were smart and dumb? Do you know what I'm saying?
They had a good beat and then you have Strawberry Fields. It's that whole thing of like, so Colin...
You stopped. Oh, shit.
No, no.
Anyway,
it was like Colin Wright's so smart.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/fly. netsuite.com/fly. netsuite.com/fly.
Looking to save on delivery? DashPass from DoorDash is your door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. DashPass is an exclusive membership with DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts. Whether it's food from your favorite restaurants, grocery from across town, or anything in between, DashPass is the most affordable way to get everything you need delivered right to your door. With $0 delivery fees and lower service fees on eligible orders, DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites on DoorDash. DashPass pays for itself in 2 orders on average. Plus, DashPass gives you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, all for $9.99 a month. Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for DashPass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply.
If you see, Dana, if you see any of his one-man show,
I watch them all the time. I've seen all of them, I believe.
Oh, thanks.
They're really fun to watch. What I was just going to ask you, I don't know if you were, David, it's like the research part of it, because you're, how steeped are you in the history of when you, the research part, before you make the comedy part?
Because of Google, it's not like the old days. But the only one that was a lot of research, the one was a lot of research was the Constitution one, because I had to read these books to understand what everybody's thinking about it at that time. So I read these horribly boring books, because in the old days they wrote books, you had nothing to watch on TV, so you had to read the books so they could write it as intricately as they wanted.
Yeah.
So I'm reading these books going, oh my God, this language is, you know, from another, it's another animal. And but that's it. But mostly now with Google, any facts I want, I just Google them. But you know how it is. Then you're on you just lost in a rabbit hole. And then I'm like, why was I here originally again?
Yeah, it's hours and hours. Yeah,
the worst.
Well, on the premiere night of Grown Ups, I think number one, we were all in New York doing press, and we all came to see your show. Right? Was that which show was that?
That was long story short.
Long story short.
That's how long ago that was. That was 12 years ago you guys were there.
Gross. Anyway, we walk out of there in a daze going, why are we all in comedy? It's all like so thought out and put together. And I'm like,
yeah.
Even the Constitution one, I'm like, do you think you had to read the Constitution? Because I would never. And then you have to write a whole thing about it.
It's only 4 pages.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's really, really
It's 4
quick.
Pages of Constitution.
Yeah,
how do you feel?
Yeah, I had to write all these books.
What's a one-man show for you versus stand-up? For you personally as a performer?
The same thing. I feel like it's the same exact thing. To me, it is. Because I
Except
work all
you don't
material
get the
out at clubs. Right. But I work it out. I work it out at the clubs. So I mean, it's the same thing, you know. If it's not getting laughs there, I'm not going to put it in the show, you know.
Because back in the day, if a comedian was too dry or whatever, people might say, "Oh, it's a one man show," you know, because it's not going for the oath of the comic that will get six laughs a minute or something.
By the way, I know. No, I'm trying to get laughs.
Yours are very funny. Yours are extremely funny. Well, that's different.
By the way, what's better than Fred Armisen? Since one man show guy.
Yes, yeah. Fred Armisen.
Oh, it's a pet.
Yes.
And his comedian. And he did his comedian guy on Update. Do you remember that?
The guy, and then the accent guy who goes around the room with the accents. Where are you from?
Well, that's amazing.
Long Beach.
Remember we did the stand-up guy who's like, got an army jacket. He's like, look.
Oh, yeah,
the New York Times, okay, my father, okay. And he just keeps.
he just would interrupt himself so beautifully. I asked him, how do you do that? Because that's like a mental technique, you know? And he goes, yeah, just do it.
Yeah.
Colin, lastly, were you a roast guy? Did you do roasts?
Yeah. Well, the Howard Stern roast, you know. The Audie roast, the Gary roast. Oh my God, those are my favorite things.
Shit, yeah, they're not doing as many.
Have you done a joke that you thought you had to kind of check it with people to see if it had crossed the line in a roast, from funny to cool, or are you just what's one that sticks out?
No, but I feel like they're all just, you know. I mean, yeah, they're all going to be.
They're pretty
rough.
They
all have to be godless to a certain extent, but nothing now. Comedians, like the young comedians, do these roasts put on YouTube. They're so much more brutal than anybody. We thought we were like, I thought I was like, whoa, that's hardcore. They don't give a damn. It's really funny to watch. So whatever we did was like light compared to what it goes on now at roasts, you know?
What happened is like Amy Schumer sort of got known from roasts and maybe Whitney.
Right.
And there's people that blew up. So they go, here's my one chance. The worst is if you're getting roasted and they go, oh, we're going to have a couple of your friends in quotes and then eight new comics. And you go, so there's no fun between you two. It's just an assassination.
Yeah, no.
They get famous from it.
But what I hate is, once again, my little critiques of everything, is that there's writers at roast. I hate that. I hate it. Like when we did roast, you wrote your own jokes. That was the whole pride. Like these are all from me. And once in a while, somebody would go to their friend, hey, I'm making fun of you know, I'm sure people took jokes from other people, but it was you. And now it's writers and the jokes are good. But like you said, they're brutal. Nobody cares. It's not you up there saying it. You wrote it. You tell us. And the other person is desperate for jokes. So you got these celebrities making some obscure, you know, jokes about somebody's, you know, first wife dying or whatever.
Yeah.
They don't know what they say. You know what I mean?
It's right. Just insane. Right. They're up there going, hey, which one's being roasted? Chevy? Okay. Hey, you fucking asshole. And you're like, what?
Right.
My friends can say that to me, but I don't know who you are.
And
that's why people get mad. Yeah. If no one's getting beat up at a roast, I don't know how this thing happened with Will Smith. I mean, roasts are brutal. All right. Well, I guess we should let Colin go. Colin, by the way, I moved, so if you want to stay here next time, you got a spot
it's
for you.
Huge.
If
you
want.
You moved?
Yeah. He's got a mansion.
No.
It's beautiful.
What's your new address? Almost made you say it on the air.
It was so close. They would have been with a battering ram in 10 minutes.
Well, I will keep liking all your stuff on Twitter, even though I get mad at myself. I keep liking too many in a row, and I go, this is embarrassing.
No, I appreciate it.
Go
I
do your thing,
it.
And I can't wait to see you when you come stay here.
I'll see you in heaven.
Christ's sakes, Colin Quinn, nobody like him, okay?
It's kind Guys, of thank popular. You so much, but I heard your new opening, and I don't like it. You go live from the podcast. It's Dana and David.
Why do we never think of that?
Who is saying
so
that?
So lame.
Oh, really? All right, we'll stop that.
I heard that you guys is open. Oh, by the way, let me tell you one more SNL thing.
Sure.
Dennis McNicholas was a writer. He's working on the show. But we were sitting there one day, and I'm listening to Nick Drake, because, you know, in the late 90s, it was like, ooh, Nick Drake. So, yes, I'm one of those assholes. But
Nick Drake.
This song comes on called Saturday Sun by Nick Drake. And Dennis McNicholas goes to me, that's the Saturday Night Live at the end of the show. That's the song. And then we went down and asked, you know, she was in charge of
Hal Wilner?
No, not Hal, but she, you know, she was in charge of the piano.
Cheryl.
Cheryl Hines.
Cheryl.
At some point. Yeah.
Cheryl. And we go, Cheryl, could that be possible that they took a Nick Drake song? And she goes, Howard, when Howard Shore was in charge of music, she goes,
yeah,
Howard definitely would have done that. So that Dennis McNicholas discovered, not that anyone asked, but the mystery of that last song.
At least everyone has that answer. Now, Colin, before, Colin, I'm not going to leave.
I took a shot.
We don't have a corny ending. We have a good, solid ending.
You don't have a corny ending except what I just said.
No, except here's how I end the show now. Bye-bye.
This is what he does.
Man, you missed the easy one.
Special.
Yeah, and then Dana says
that.
That's
my sign off. I like the 80s. What was your sign off for update? Did you have one?
Oh, yeah. What was we'll end on that?
What is it?
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
Oh, that's a great one.
That was a good one.
Yeah, you had a
great
one.
That's a great one.
Thanks.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Colin. Love you. Hope to see you.
Bye. Love you. Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, what's up, flies? What's up, fleas? What's up, people that listen? We want to hear from you and your dumb questions.
Questions, ask us anything. Anything you want.
You can email us at flyonthewall@cadence13.com. All right, here's a question. This is a question from Jason Smith. Your podcast is better than Cats. The play? The movie? I hope. The animal? I doubt it. Cats are great. I will listen to it again and again. Anyway, I like when they start with a compliment. That's smart. That gets me in. Imagine, if you will, there's a comedic heaven. You're standing before its hilarious gates. In order to be admitted, you must submit one piece from your body of work and be judged. What would you submit? Oh, Dana's not here. I don't know if I can answer for Dana. I'll answer for me. I like to people that go, I can't speak for him, but then I do. I don't mind speaking for people. What would I pick? A lot of people would say, Dave, pick Tommy Boy. But Tommy Boy is mostly Farley. It's not really me. I mean, it's a hit because of Farley. I liked Just Shoot Me and Rules of Engagement, the sitcoms I did, but those are other people too. That's based on other people doing great, you know, and they make me funnier. So that's kind of a cheat. Emperor's New Groove is, I mean, I like it. I'm in it a lot. The voice. I'm handing in voice work to get it. Oh my God. Desperate. But, you know, Kuzco and Yzma, they're so funny though. Fuck. And so the total of that makes that movie funny. And the animation is so great. Animation helps every joke. Fuck. Maybe my stand-up specials. I love them and it's just me. I mean, I love Joe Dirt. Joe Dirt's mostly, at least I'm driving it and co-wrote it, so it's a good representation. But if they don't get it in heaven, then they really don't get it because some people don't like it. This is tough. Glad Dana doesn't get to chirp in. I get to just take all this time and just stare off into space. Ah, it's so glorious. But I would have to go with, but what if it's R-rated because it's heaven? I can't hand in anything R-rated. Then I'm screwed. It's been very R-rated lately. Someone even commented, it was a little blue during your Mike Myers interview. I go, I don't give a care. Okay. Special, one of my specials. I think. Dana has a lot to give in, so I would say that or one of my appearances on Ellen out of my 30. No, some of those talk shows were fun, funny. There's just different things. Some of the stuff I wrote I thought was funny. I don't know. I'm just not getting in. Thank you for the question. This has been a podcast presentation of Cadence 13. Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes. Available now for free, wherever you get your podcast.
No joke, folks.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13, executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment.
The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman, with production and engineering support from Serena Regan and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.